Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Accelerate Your Business Growth,
where we're exploring all sorts of business topics. Experts from around the world join me, your host, Diane Helbig, for a conversation where they share their expertise with all of you. Take what you need when you need it. Featured on Inc.com, Forbes, and MSNBC's Your Business, this podcast is recognized as one of the best podcasts for small business, sales, leadership, social media, and more. When it comes to business, Accelerate Your Business Growth has got it covered. And now on with the show. My guest today is Gabe DeRita. 5 years ago, Gabe had a successful sales career he thought he wanted, but inside he was troubled and unhappy. So he quit his job and embarked on a bike trip around the world seeking greater purpose. During that time, he discovered a calling in coaching and leadership development. Today, Gabe has trained hundreds of employees across many industries, including leaders from startups to Fortune 500s, on how to build better relationships in the workplace. Thanks so much for joining me today, Gabe.
Thanks, Diane, for having me on. I was really excited to be on the show with you.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have you here. We're going to be talking about how to retain your best talent. And I'm going to start, I want to say sort of philosophically, but I would love to hear from you why cultivating internal talent, why you think cultivating internal talent is so is such an important thing for a leader to focus on.
Well, the simplest way to answer that is hiring new people is expensive, right? So yeah. I think the people who are already in your organization have bought into it to some degree, right? People are there because they either believe in what they do or they were a good fit for the job. They had the skills and talent required to get through the door in the first place. And I think it's easier to just invest in what you've got then go out and try to create something new from scratch, right? A new relationship, a new training program, and just a new person takes time. And I remember every time I started a new job, there was like at least a 90-day period where I showed up every workday, just kind of like, what am I doing? What happens now? I don't know what's going on. And so not only do you have that new person who's sort of taking a while to get onboarded, you also have all of the best people on your team focused on making that person successful instead of doing their other job, right? Which might be selling or developing product or whatever it is. And so keeping the talent that you have and making the people that are already in the room more effective is the most cost-efficient, time-efficient, resource-efficient way to build a successful team.
Yeah, you know, I love what you just said, and I hadn't realized consciously that one of the things that happens when a new hire comes in is that so many people have to divide their energy or refocus their energy toward that new person, taking away from their main priority. You know, when you say it, I go, oh, right, that's true. But I hadn't really thought about the impact of that. That's an interesting aspect of when we bring people on, that huge investment that we make in them.
Yeah, it's a hidden cost. And I just started working a little over a year ago with a new firm that does leadership development training. A lot of my work is as, you know, kind of a hired gun, or I come in and work and partner with teams on specific projects. And in order for them to onboard me, they not only needed to fly me to Tucson, but they also had to have the president of their company and their best lead trainer there for an entire weekend to deliver their content to me, just to get me up to speed, because they couldn't bring me in and have me sit in on a client session and just be like, here's this random guy in the back of the room, don't worry about him, right? They had to bring in their best talent and have them spend a whole weekend with me just to give me a basic understanding of their content. So the investment from their side was huge in just getting me up to a very basic level of how to deliver their material. And so that's when, you know, you're bringing somebody on, that same challenge is there. You could divert, you know, people who aren't experts to help train that person and maybe get mixed results, or you could give them your best talent and thought leaders in the business to make sure that they learn from day one how to do it right. But then you have very like high powered resources being pulled off of other projects to support that individual.
Yeah.
And so once you've made that investment, not just of money to hire the person, but also of, you know, your thought leadership and your team resources and the energy and time of your high performers, you really want to try to keep that person around.
Boy, no kidding. Okay. So we make all of this investment. What are some of the key factors that potentially lead people to leave the job?
I think there are many. And I think in today's work environment, those factors are like, you know, even more complex and nuanced because of all of the changes in the way that, you know, businesses are having to grapple with the fact that money's no longer free to borrow. So there's like, now we're not focused on growth, we're focused on performance and profitability, which in some ways is good, but it kind of changes what people have come to expect about their role. Like, oh, you know, my bonus isn't going up every year. I think a lot of people are feeling shaky about the future of certain roles in response to the growth of AI. So like all of these things are happening. But I think some of the most foundational, like I would say, air quote, traditional reasons, I don't think change, because they have to do with human relationships. And there's some stable elements of that across industries and across, you know, different cultures that I've seen consistent. And one of the biggest ones is trust, that I don't feel a sense of trust in my leadership. I don't feel trusted by my organization or valued here. I don't feel trust in what this company is doing. Like, the, you know, what they say doesn't match what they do when it comes to customers or employees. People in a low trust scenario are looking for the exit, or they're looking for ways to minimize their exposure to risk in that low trust environment, where you get things like, you know, quiet quitting, where it's like, oh, I'm just going to sit here and like try to do as little as possible and just get away with getting a paycheck until I finally find my way out, right? I think trust and low trust environments leads to people looking for the exit really quickly, irrespective of some of those other like market factors and, you know, changes in technology. And another one that I think is, I coach a lot of early in their career leaders. So people who are, you know, director, senior director, kind of that mid-level manager tier. And a lot of those people are really high potential talent, and their turnover comes from lack of opportunity. So they want to see a path forward in the business for their growth that allows them to achieve longer term goals beyond their job description. They want to see an upside in the business. And if it's not in the business, they want to stay for an upside that they could take elsewhere. So it doesn't mean that you need to just have a constant path for promotion, but you at least need to give that person something that inspires them and has them feel like they're growing every day in their job.
Okay, so let's talk about what some of those things are. How does a leader create that sort of community, opportunity, engagement, you know, all of those things that help people stay, you know, help them feel like they're contributing to something meaningful?
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of different forms in response to the unique needs of the team or what's possible in the business, but it starts usually in the same place, which is getting to know what matters to the people on your team, particularly people that you want to keep in the business, high potential talent, folks that you want to see grow in some way. It starts with an investment in a personal relationship to really understand what motivates that individual and what matters to them. And it's kind of shocking to me how many conversations I've had with managers where I mentioned something like, oh, do you know what your, you know, team's core values are? do you know what like personally matters to the people that you're leading? And they'll go, gosh, I never thought to ask that. And I'm like, good. I'm glad we're having this conversation then, because this is low hanging fruit for you, right? You can just go out for coffee and be like, why are you here? You know, and if they say, oh, I'm here for the paycheck, be like, oh, well, what are you doing with your paycheck? You know what I mean? Like Richard Strozzi Heckler is a great teacher. He does embodiment coaching with Strozzi Institute. And he taught me to ask this question, for the sake of what? And I really love the simplicity and power of that. It's like, okay, you're here for the money. For the sake of what? Right. Oh, well, or Simon Sinek, right? Ask, what's your why?
Yeah.
Start with why. That's really where it all begins. And so there's different paths to creating engagement or success or a good culture from there. But if you don't root it in that question of like, why are you here? What is this for the sake of? What are the values that really light you up and bring you fulfillment and purpose and meaning in the work that you're doing? If you don't have that, you're just building a house of cards. You're climbing the wrong mountain with your team. And so I think it takes a lot of different paths to success, but it all starts at that place. Understanding what are the core values of the individuals that you're serving as a leader.
I could not agree more. So when I do leadership training, that is exactly one of the, I go through like a goals ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And one of my questions is, what are the goals of the people? And usually the responses I get are work-related goals. And so I let them go through all of them. But then I pull it further into, okay, why? Mm-hmm. Maybe they're getting divorced. Maybe they're getting married. Maybe they want to buy their kid a bike. Maybe it's braces, college, a house. Who knows? But there are other goals that they have that directly impact how they show up and vice versa, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get it. I think it is critically important. And it's on an individual basis as well. That's one of the things
correct.
I heard you say. Yeah.
Correct.
Not the collective.
There is a unique relationship between individual and collective values. And individually, our values create our personality. Collectively, our values create our culture. And so there's a nice connection there where you can get the individual to see their unique self reflected in the mosaic of the whole. And so that's where really good team culture comes from, is where everybody feels personally invested in the collective expression of values via the company culture and team values. So they see their personal story in relationship to that greater whole. And I think that's a really great place to be able to bring people as a leader. But I want to back up to something you said about goals for a moment.
Yeah.
Which is that I actually try to take folks a cut deeper than like, okay, cool, you need the braces or the bike or whatever, and ask them what value is being expressed by being able to achieve that goal. Because there's usually not a like checkbox thing there. It's more of a like a something that matters to me at a deeper level. And so family comes up all the time as a core value. And I ask people to go say, okay, well, what does family allow you to express? And for some people, it's like legacy, you know, I want to leave the world better than I found it for my kids. Or for some people, it's seeing others grow and develop, right? And their family is just the most important place for them where that value gets expressed. For some people, it's dependability or loyalty or being a steadfast, steady person who really shows up and kind of does what they say they're going to do. And so those are examples of values that aren't goals in and of themselves.
Yeah.
The goals actually point to this deeper sense of meaning that this person is achieving by checking those boxes and getting those things done. And if you have a sense of that as a leader, then you can really motivate your team sustainably and effectively in profound ways. It goes way beyond carrots and sticks, right? Where you're actually able to have a sustainable sense of like, I'm connecting to something that's deeply important to you as a human being and what I'm asking you to do on a daily, weekly, and quarterly basis. And that's an incredible resource to be able to have.
Boy, no kidding. That is great. I love that. It's really going deeper to what does that really do for you? What does that really feel like? You know, how do you know when you're there? Yeah, that's great. Wow. Okay. So, excuse me. So, we talked about getting to know our people and really what their why is motivators, their values, all of those things. And then I guess my question is, then how can the leader take that information and empower those folks as a team so that they are self-sufficient? So they're, you know, that they have a direction, they believe in that direction, and they are working together in that, you know, forward.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, right? Like, how do we operationalize this?
Right? Yeah.
How do we put it into action?
Yeah.
I think there are two parts that are coming to mind for me. The first is that folks have, you know, when you're creating the plan as a leader and kind of developing the direction of the team, that you try to make it as responsive as you can to what's like you're hearing from the team, right? That you're collecting feedback and getting input, and not just in a lip service way, but that you're actually saying, hey, like, we heard you guys, right? And we're trying to make a balance between, you know, the needs of the business and the stuff we all got to do. And maybe not all of it's glamorous or wonderful or makes us feel like we're just fully alive, right? Because nobody loves spreadsheets, but we've at least had a chance to have a conversation as a team of like, you know, what matters to you and what you want to contribute. That like Gay Hendricks has this concept of a zone of genius, right? Where it's like this unique contribution that you're able to make. And so am I putting you in a place where you really are able to shine, you know, where you're really able to bring your best? And as a leader, I understand like how to make you more effective just by putting you in a place where you're going to naturally exhibit your talents and strengths and kind of best resources. So I think there's a sort of like a calibration that a leader needs to do to put people in, on a path to success to the greatest degree that they can in their role by allowing people to just, you know, do what they're meant to do. And I think, you know, when you have this, again, that connection of the individual to the collective mission, and you've given people a chance to understand personally what's their stake in this beyond the paycheck, then you unlock this discretionary energy that people have, right? Where they want to go above and beyond because they believe in what they're doing. They feel excited by it. And, you know, maybe not everybody's going to get there, but you do have some people on the team who are really going to distinguish themselves through this sort of process of really deep belief in what they're doing.
So for the people who can't get there, is there still a contribution that they can make, or is this not the right environment for them?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Okay. So we go through this process, we understand what people need, and we go through this process and we have this team together. I'm wondering if, I'm thinking, I guess, that there are times when there are people who it just doesn't resonate with.
Right.
You're right. They're just not feeling it. That they're not excited to just dive in and go beyond. And even though we've tried to put them, you know, make sure that they are in the best place. So my question is there a way to still create an environment that they can be contributing to, or is it better to say, you know, this isn't serving them, it's not serving us, this is not the right culture or environment fit?
Yeah, I understand. Okay. And I think it just depends on what you as a leader like really need from that individual and what their impact is on other people in the team. And so like if they're in a leadership role or if they're in a management position and they're not bought in, that might be a greater risk or liability than if they're just like, you know, an individual contributor, even a high level IC, you know what I mean? That just has a specialized role. Like you can't expect everybody to come into it with this like deep sense of, you know, belief in them. Like you said, that's not going to work for everybody. So then is it enough for you in the business to just have that person doing one thing really well, and they're just an expert in that thing, and that's great, and they can support the team by deliverables and executing and holding the deadlines. But then if that person says, hey, I want to grow in this company, or I want more responsibility, I want more pay, I want to manage people, like you will know, but if you're not bought into the values, that's going to have a collateral damage effect on everybody that reports into you, because you're not going to be bringing that energy to your work. You're going to see it as transactional, and then the people beneath you are going to see it the same way. And so then if that person says, you know, I need a promotion or I'm going to leave, then it might be a moment to say, all right, well, you know what? Maybe we need to find somebody else to lead this team. And if you got to pursue excellence elsewhere, then God bless, go ahead.
Yeah.
But like, if they're willing to just do the thing they do really well, and it's not, you know, having a negative impact on others, then I'd say, you know, just get what you really need from that individual and minimize the collateral damage or impact that they would have on others in the business. And that usually means keeping them at an IC level, because once you get above that and you're leading others, I think some degree of belief in what the organization is doing and those collective values starts to really matter.
I really appreciate that answer. It's really great, because I know I've had people say, okay, but you know, John's been doing the job that he does for 40 years. He doesn't want to advance. He just wants to be left alone to do his work. He does a great job. And my response has always been, okay, great. Then let John just do his job. Like,
yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Right on. One less thing right. We have to worry about, right?
Yeah. And management infrastructure is expensive, right? And you know, yeah. You can't just keep promoting people and giving them new titles and like, you know what I mean? The business, it's like this big middle section that's super top heavy, where it's like, and then you have all this weird dotted line reporting, and then all the Johns of the world have actually three bosses because everybody wants somebody reliable on their project. And you get this like the matrix organization, I'm air quoting here, like the disaster of like who's on what project. And I'm actually in product, but I'm reporting to sales half the time. And I think that comes from like a bloated management infrastructure where organizations just want to be promoting people a lot, but they're not actually like giving them, you know, true authority to lead projects or teams in effective ways.
Right. Yeah.
So here's to the Johns of the world.
Yes.
want to do their job. That's fine.
We love the Johns, right? They don't cause any problems, right? They contribute in their way. Yeah. So a lot of this feels like the success or failure of a leader has a lot to do with communication. And one thing that I think a lot of us have noticed since the pandemic is these hybrid environments can create additional challenges to our ability to communicate effectively. Mm-hmm. So what advice do you have for our listeners around ways that they can be communicating effectively, having difficult conversations, you know, that whole communication piece?
Oh, I mean, this is a multi-part series, right? This is three episodes at least. It's also my favorite topic. My core value is really for connection and intimacy and shared understanding. And so creating this is something that's a passion for me, both in individuals and in teams. And I talked about trust before, and I think moving at the speed of trust is like essential for people to really feel like they're communicating with you well. And that can just be as simple as like checking for understanding or operating without assumptions. And it's really, really hard to do.
Yeah.
But that's something that like one of these foundational practices of authentic relating, which is a toolkit I use with teams. The second principle is assume nothing, which is actually impossible. We can't do that. What we need to do instead is notice, name, and drop assumptions. And so cleaning up our communication as a leader means getting really good at noticing where it is an assumption about an individual or a group or a stakeholder or whatever. Where is that assumption influencing my behavior and the way I talk about an issue? Because if we don't notice that, then we're already losing those people on the other side of that assumption as like, oh, you know, Gabe's tone deaf or he doesn't get it, or see, there he goes again, right? If we're not willing to see the places where we're missing like actual contact with another person's experience or priorities, and we're just moving forward without clarifying those assumptions or checking for shared understanding, that's where we lose people as a leader. And I think it can be really hard in that hybrid environment and requires diligence, right? There's really no other solution other than just like really making sure that we're clear on what's needed to move forward. And I think that's a simple question we can ask: what's needed here? to effectively, you know, honor ourselves and honor what we need and honor others and kind of what's important to them. And maybe there are places where those needs don't meet all the time. We're having to compromise or cross a gap in that, that Venn diagram doesn't line up perfectly. Right. But I think people will feel more trust in us and will be more effective as a communicator and a leader if we at least take the time to have that conversation. And I just actually was coaching a leader yesterday about this, who had to like redo an entire project that she spent the whole month of January working on. Oof. Because like there were some key assumptions about what the stakeholders wanted that were not represented in the final product. And it's just back to the drawing board, like I have to rip all the guts out of this thing and redo it.
Wow.
And you know, and she's like, I won't forget this lesson.
Yeah. No kidding. Well, and that's a great question.
Yeah. What's needed here? You know, and she did ask, right? She said, well, what do you guys want from this? It's not like she didn't think to pause and ask that. And they said, oh, we want this. But, you know, people don't actually know, right? Ford famously said, if I asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said like, you know, a faster horse or something, right? They didn't even know they needed a car. And so sometimes just showing people a mock-up or something, being like, hey, this is what you said you wanted. Do you want me to go make this? And they'll be like, oh, no, no, wait, no, that's not it. Like sometimes it requires those types of steps to get clarity.
Yes, right. So it's sort of, it sounds to me like it's also being mindful of slowing down to speed up.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah,
moving, we're in such a hurry. We're in a hurry. And it takes time to create that alignment. And if we don't do it, then we pay the cost later by having to go back.
Right. And sometimes you can't mend those relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, trust is built, you know, over time and lost in an instant. And it can take a lot of work to rebuild it.
Yeah, it feels like there's a there's an intention, an awareness, and a lot of self-reflection for a leader to be asking themselves questions, you know, am I asking enough questions? Am I asking good questions? Am I assuming? Am I speeding through this? Am I listening?
Mm-hmm. And what is the quality of my listening? Right? I was introduced to this concept recently of listening to win. And as soon as I heard it, I knew what they meant. I was like, oh yeah, I've had conversations like that. Well, you know, the person who's listening is like trying to extract the data they need to build a case against me. And that's not the type of listening that I want. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
Versus listening to understand or listening to collaborate. I can say these words and I imagine listeners will feel what it's like to remember a conversation where they were with someone who was listening to win.
Absolutely.
Was with someone who was listening to understand.
Yeah.
And that's, you said the magic words, self-awareness. That's what we as a leader are required to do.
Yeah.
It's to be aware, am I listening to win right now? Or am I listening to understand, and to know the difference and correct our behavior in real time?
Right.
It sounds super simple. It's actually really hard. It takes work. It takes focus. And it takes a prioritization of our self-development to really grow in this way. And I encountered an interesting statistic in one of the workshops I run for a consulting firm that I do, that I partner with, where they talked about this study from Stanford School of Business, where they surveyed the graduates of one of the most prestigious MBAs in the country. And they asked, what's the number one skill that leaders need that they don't have? And 75% of them said self-awareness.
Wow.
The number one skill that they saw missing in the leadership in their business world.
I can see people, that.
They're just unaware of what they're doing and not doing. And I think it's considered, I'm air quoting here, like a soft skill, you know, self-awareness. Okay. How do we measure that? How do we put it into a report? How do we like, you know, get it up by 15% or whatever, but it's so mission critical to your ability to do all of these other things effectively, like, you know, retain talent and communicate and motivate others. Like all of it comes from this place of like, within, like, who are we within and what is our quality of character and how aware are we of the way we're engaging with others? That's the meta skill that leads to downstream measurable results in all of these other important categories in the business, because it's that interplay that really makes that impact. Yeah. And a lot of people think that leaders need competence, that they need specific skills, that they need to be the subject matter expert in whatever they're leading their team on. And it isn't true.
No.
What they need is character, not competence.
Yeah.
They need to be a leader of character and of substance and somebody who's self-aware and who's driving from that place of like true caring for people at a human level and motivated from values and connection. Those are the type of people we want to give that extra energy and time to, not people who are just like really good at the thing they're asking us to do.
Right. Right. It's so true. One of the things that I say often is a leader's job is not to have all the answers. It's to convene the resources to find the answers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And Absolutely. So many leaders, especially small business owners, think that they have to know everything. They have to have all the solutions. There's no way they're ever going to.
Guilty as charged. I mean, I'm still a student of this work, right? So in my business, I'm always like, I can't trust them with that. I need to do it.
Right.
I'm a terrible accountant. I shouldn't be doing my taxes. This is
not at all. Right.
No.
Yeah. It's exactly right. Oh my gosh. That is so funny. Gabe, I've so enjoyed this conversation and appreciate you spending this time with me. I think this is critical for all the listeners, whether they are small business owners, business leaders, leaders in their families, you know, in their community, it really doesn't matter. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Diane. I really appreciate the platform and I appreciate your call out at the end that this applies to anybody who's out there like having human relationships. And that's what I really appreciate about the approach to this work that I'm taking is that it impacts us at that personal level. And if we allow ourselves to really lead from there, that's where we create better outcomes in our personal and professional lives. And I get that feedback a lot from workshop participants and groups that I'm leading that they're like, you know, this was great for me as a leader, but this also made me like a better spouse or I bring this stuff with one of my clients is like, I actually do this stuff with my kids now. Some of the communication stuff you're teaching because it works.
Sure.
It's just about being a better human.
Yes. And
isn't that fun, right? That we don't have to like just make it about our performance as a manager, but that we have permission to grow as a whole human being and take that impact to every arena of our lives.
It's so true. It is so true. My gosh, will you tell the listeners how they can find you, please?
Sure. My website's effectiveconnection.com. And I always love having conversations with people, no strings attached. There's a link there to book a call with me. I also provided that link for you if you want to add it to the show notes, just a direct link to my calendar. And I'm on LinkedIn as Gabe DeRita, Gabriel DeRita. And I also use Instagram more for my fun stuff. On the side, I'm obsessed with riding bikes and hunting wild mushrooms for food. And so if you're interested in that nerdy side of things, you can find me on Instagram at FunGabe, which is with two N's, FUNNGABE. And sometimes I'm posting about my public workshops on there. But I think the best way to reach me is just at my website at effectiveconnection.com.
Wonderful. Excuse me. Thank you so much for that. And as I said, thank you for being here and having this conversation with me. And listeners, thank you. You are who we're doing this for. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Accelerate Your Business Growth, a production of Evergreen Podcasts. Discover more episodes of this podcast and explore others at evergreenpodcast.com. As always, continue to prosper and be curious. And if you're looking to get your sales strategy headed in the right direction, pick up a copy of Succeed Without Selling on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Until we meet again on another episode of Accelerate Your Business Growth, goodbye and good day.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.